from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I am Ryan Harkness.
Ooh, that was very...
grandiose.
I know. Do you feel as though that's meritful?
Well, the problem is, if you say my name quickly, it just mutters out, Harkness, 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 Ryan Harkness.
Only if you have mush mouth.
It's how I sign it. After I get past the H-A-R, I just kind of go... Blah, blah.
I know, it's true. Maybe you do the same in your pronunciation. My name is Ryan Harkness.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I thought I'd enunciate it a little bit differently so that people can look me up and shoot me for disagreeing with my views.
Oh, right. Well, it's important. I mean, I assume, though, that there's a lot of Ryan Harknesses. So maybe it'll be like one of those Sarah Connor things where a couple Ryan Harknesses fucking start dying. And you're like, shit, what's happening? Is there fucking someone trying to kill me?
Yep. Well, I am the Ryan Harkness on the internet. When you look up Ryan Harkness, I'm the first Ryan Harkness. All the others came after, born in 1987 and such.
You know, for a long time, the only thing that was appearing when you typed Jacob Forte was that picture that you put of me on the site where I look as though I have Down syndrome.
Well, it was a picture of somebody with Down syndrome.
Yeah, I know. And you just said Jacob Forte, you sack of shit. So I worked many years, and thanks to the Good Atheist, rising success... I no longer have that picture under my name.
At least your name isn't associated with some kind of disgusting fecal froth.
Why? Is that what your name means?
No. You haven't heard about, what was it, Rick Santorum?
What about him? Oh, he has a name, a kind of urban name.
He said something basically to the effect that men who have sex with other men are the equivalent of child molesters or people who fuck animals. So this columnist, Dan Savage, basically decided that they were going to name a disgusting a gay sex act after his last name, Santorum. So they decided that Santorum would hereforth be known as the froth of lube and fecal matter after gay sex.
Wow. The flotsam of nastiness.
Exactly. And it worked really well. It was the first official Google bomb, and obviously it pretty much ruins this guy's chances of being taken seriously on a world stage. It's quite delightful.
So it needs a name. That disgustingness needs a name. It happens.
I know, and that's the great thing, because Santorum sounds like it should... it sounds like the terminology came before... the politician's name. That's what I love about it.
Although when you say it, it kind of reminds me of sanitarium some weird way. So, or maybe sanitary. So I could see it. You might not even know.
It's like the opposite of sanitary. It's Santorum.
I like it. Well, so here's the deal, folks. We have an awesome show for you. Everybody's always talking about how much they love this section. It's another Bible stories, but rather than the story section, because a significant part of the Bible is just pretty much the laws, we decided that we were going to cover not all, but the most amusing laws of the Pentateuch, the 613 crazy laws that make up the Old Testament. So we're going to talk about those laws in respect to, say, modern times. And you can get to sort of see not only what are some of the hilarious laws that just don't make any sense, but also whenever somebody talks, we need to go back to the fundamentals or biblical laws and blah, blah, you'll be able to quote many of these laws because they are hilarious.
And they're terrible.
They're so insane. In today's modern society, anybody who does this... will be either put in jail, a sanitarium, or a Santorum.
Well, isn't the whole point of being like, if you're an Orthodox Jew, you try to follow as many of these 613. Like, they did say there's some niggling around the edges as to how many of these laws should actually be contained here. But in general, you got all these laws, and the Orthodox Jews actually try really hard. Like, they follow all of the dietary requirements. They do all of the thou shalt not on these day things.
Yeah, you can't do nothing. Can't even turn on a light.
Like all
on
of
a Sabbath,
a whole bunch. When you're going through the list, there's all these laws that you identify and go, oh, okay, this is why Jews do this, and this is why Jews do that. It was kind of enlightening in some ways.
Well, there is a book called Year of Living Biblically by A.J. Jacobs. I'll have it in the notes.
Google it, people.
But anyways, he tries to live by all the commandments. And
what,
that's,
the Ten Commandments or the 613?
The 613. He lived by the laws of the Old Testament. So the, you know, stoning adulterers, he would pick up little pebbles and throw it at them to try to keep the rules as literal as possible.
Well, that's a literal interpretation, but not...
But that's the way
he took
it.
It's not following the heart and soul. It's kind of like there was a whole bunch of...
Well, what's he supposed to do? He would be, like I said, in jail if he did most of these things.
Yeah, it's true, but I just want to point out that a lot of these laws now... I mean, there's so many laws about, you know, like, how to take care of your ass, a.k.a. your donkey. And I'm just like, look, if you're going to follow this to the spirit of what was said, it means from now on when you buy a car... You should sacrifice a lamb, just like if you bought a donkey. Because it's the same fucking thing. You're going to ride your donkey around town, you'd slaughter a lamb. You're going to get a car,
or
slaughter
a truck.
Think God can't tell what the modern-day equivalency is, people? He's God.
He knows that your truck is actually two donkeys.
And we have already established that he's a jealous mofo who demands that you follow all of his laws, spoken and unspoken, assumed and unassumed.
He gets so mad when any of these are broken. Like, you don't even... I hope that most of you listening to this who have enjoyed the Bible stories remember particularly the one with Moses, the three-parter. Because that one I felt that you could really get a taste of the cruelty of God. I mean, there'll be more in the coming chapters, especially when we go into the book of Joshua and what have you, where they really start the killing. So rather than God annihilating his own chosen people, that's what pretty much Exodus and the wilderness is all about, the rest of the books are essentially about their genocide of the Amalekites, the Canaanites, you know, all the people that they're actually commanded to kill. But we'll get to that. But first, there's just one quick thing that I want to do before we actually talk about the show. It's a letter from a patron, so guess what, folks? I succumbed to peer pressure.
Just like with the Vatican, giving us money gets you some extra perks.
That's right. You know, we can't pray your way into heaven, but we will just read your shit. But here's the catch. It still has to be compelling. Not just because you write me, hello, can you say my name on the show? No one will not.
I don't know. If someone did that, they'd have a... The first time you do it, it's got its charm. It's kind of like I got boobs for my birthday from a good atheist listener.
That is true. One person took us up on that offer.
And I have a toque coming. I'm very excited about this because... Usually what happens with me and toques, and we're living in Canada, it gets very effing cold.
So cold.
So I usually spend until February or March resisting the temptation to buy a toque. So now I've got a toque coming from a good atheist member, Rachel, and I'm very excited about it.
Really? Is there anything special about this toque?
It's handmade, man, with love.
Wow, is it going to have like a word atheist or something like that on
it? If it's got like a scarlet A or something like that, yeah. That'd be pretty cool. But I'm just happy I asked for, like, she was like, you like toques? I'm like, yeah. You're like, you like black? I love black.
It's amazing. We've used barter before. Mm-hmm.
So I got
for membership.
Clothing and a lack of clothing. It's been a pretty good birthday overall. So I'll say that, you know, anytime fans reach out to us, you're going to get a reaction and you're probably going to get talked about on the radio show.
Well, that's one of the things that I guess we want to encourage people to. It's tough to get everyone or most people to really participate because I know that your listening habits, guys. You listen to us on the way to work or while you're doing something else, and then it's over. And everything I told you or asked you to do before, like say, go to the site and check this out, you forget about it. It's normal. Totally normal.
Why can't you be sheep like religious people?
That's right. Stop thinking for yourselves. That's an order.
So let's hear this letter.
Okay, the letter starts, what label do you give yourself, if any? Secular humanism, existentialist, transhumanism, etc. Which one is the closest to what you believe? I ask because my views are similar to you, and I need to identify myself for a school project. Atheism is too vague. Sincerely yours, a high school fan. That's a kind of a weird... project, by the way. Who organized this project?
What's the project? To identify yourself?
Yeah.
To label yourself?
To label yourself. This is a weird project, man.
Find a term that defines you completely. Live inside of it forever.
Well, okay, here's the thing. For all of you that are not familiar with transhumanism, by the way, which is a term that he put up, I don't know, are you familiar with transhumanism and what that
is? Well, look, I like the word humanism because it sounds like, hey, I just care about people, baby.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of like, what is it, libertarianism is what everybody loves to say that they are.
Don't throw that out.
There is some ridiculous shit attached to that, so just watch out. So I don't know the full scope of the it was funny, if you would say the dictionary definition of humanism, I would say the Wikipedia definition. I don't know what's in that Wikipedia article, but I like to say that I'm a humanist. I don't know what's all involved in it, but...
All right, so you have Ryan Harkness's limited understanding of humanism as your ideology. All right, you know what? I actually like that
as
better.
As a label.
Right.
As a label for my ideology.
If you had to do a school project, that makes no sense. All right, that's cool, because I think that to some degree, I would rather a person give themselves a lazy label, such as humanism, without really fully understanding what it is, because nobody cares. You know, you put humanist on a survey, they're just going to laugh at you. That doesn't mean anything to most people. There's like, humanist... No. Like, that to most people sounds like you're just a secularist. It's enough for them to be afraid. It's like, you put humans above, human interest above those of God? You frighten the crap out of me, sir.
Well, this isn't just a religious label. We're not talking about this as far as defining yourself as a Presbyterian or an Orthodox Jew or anything else like this. This is talking about, this is bigger than that, isn't it?
I guess what he's asking is, if I had to... give a label that identified my own belief structure, my ism, if you want. What is your ism, Jacob? That's what he's asking. What is your ism?
Jacobism.
And I'll tell you something. I like Ferris Bueller's take on this. He says, I don't think anyone should believe in isms. They should believe in themselves. Okay? I like that. I like that because to some degree, that's what I would call myself, a Jacobist.
So you want to be a Buellerist, really?
No. No, I believe in myself. My name is not Jacob Bueller. It's Jacob Forte.
I know, I'm just saying that since you got the idea from Ferris Bueller, then really you're just a follower of Ferris Bueller.
Maybe that's
Bueller.
What this fan can call himself, a Buellerist. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I like it.
Okay, well, I feel like the answer's a bit cheap, so let me just say that if I really had to give myself a label, the problem is it doesn't exist. Because I do like humanism, but I also find it kind of has a speciesist attitude. Why should we only care about humans? I mean, I was reading an article about an elephant that paints and how elephants are getting better at painting. Like, all of them are getting better at painting. The more that elephants paint, the better they get at it collectively. And I'm just like, hold on a second. Are you telling me that culturally they're evolving to include art because we just shoved a fucking brush in their face and then got surprised when they started creating art and we're not the only ones to be able to do this? Like, I feel like if we put the label of humanism on stuff, we're just saying the humans are the important ones, and I don't like that.
But we are the important ones. All the other ones, they're okay. They're semi-important, I suppose. Look, so long
you filthy humanist.
So long as we raise multiple species just for our chow... We're humanists, above and beyond everything else. Look, so long as we continue to eat delicious tuna, regardless of the fact that we're grinding up tons and tons of really intelligent dolphins, above and beyond all of our protests, fuck animals. Like, the only people who could say otherwise are vegetarians, and even they're kind of hypocrites, too, on many levels.
Well, they're hypocrites because a lot of vegetarians, they have such an obsession with meat, man. They make their food taste like meat in the same way that, you know, even though you think I'm not supporting the meat industry by eating meat replica, yeah, you are, actually.
Well,
in
look,
a weird and sick way, you are.
You can't win in this world.
You just can't. No, that's true.
I appreciate the effort. We've talked about this on the show many times. Like, if you could pick one thing that, you know, 100 years down the road, when our ancestors look back on what we were like and said, oh, that's really weird. I mean, obviously all the homophobia and racism is going to be high up on there, but I bet you they're going to be really freaked out by the fact that, you know, we ate animals and meat and the crazy state of how food is produced, how meat is produced.
I think that at one point we're probably going to have a kind of... What's what I'm looking for? Like, I wish that sometimes we could just ask ourselves if other species on this planet had to judge us, right, based on our actions... What kind of grade would we get from other species? I would say for most of them it'd be pretty low. Some of them would be fucking, yay, love humans. These include rats and, you know...
Tapeworms.
Tapeworms and a bunch of other animals that you don't even want them on your team, but they're on your team.
Yeah, parasites, they're like, you're A-okay by me. I love living in your colon.
Yeah. So, I think that honestly, there still is no word for it. Type the word speciesist, and you're going to find a whole bunch of strange definitions. We haven't yet fully come to grasp that we have a... I think we put too much focus on our species, not only from the perspective that most people can't even accept that we are apes, that we belong to the fucking animal family, but that everybody's like, well, you have dominion over animals, you're better than them, you're specialer. Like, what the fuck is that about? Like, I kind of hate that. You remember that God of Wonders documentary we were watching? We talked about it on the one of the bonus shows. We were saying that what was annoying was that at first this crapumentary was saying, well, human beings can't do all the amazing things that a hummingbird can do, or all these other amazing animals. And then later on, they're like, but these animals can't use their brains like we do. Like, that just sounds like a specialization that we have. No more special than fucking an ant being able to self-organize itself into a fucking massive colony of billions of individuals. Sound familiar? Like, super special dude? Yeah, you're not really that special. Just how you do it is different. I wish we could take away the human element in humanism and just say animalism. But that sounds dirty.
And plus, it just sounds so granola hippie.
It really does.
Way too far. Yeah. Way too far.
Well, I didn't say that I want to hug every animal, right?
But that's the problem. It's what it sounds like.
Okay.
This is where, once again, your terminology is a problem. You need to get one of those right-wing think tanks to come in and give it a snappy name that'll really get
your message out to the masses.
Man.
Oh, God. Why are they so good at nomenclature compared to the fucking pussy-ass liberals?
Because they're Nazis. See, I just did it to them.
Wow.
I just totally did it to them.
That was amazing. It totally summarized something without being fair. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for that.
Not a problem.
All right, I hope that this high school fan will be happy that I didn't really answer his question. But here's the deal, dude. I find that this, high school little project thing, don't let it put labels on you. Fuck that shit. Put whatever you want. They don't dictate for you who you are.
Just if you have a feeling that they won't accept that for an answer and they'll give you a 0%, then maybe give them a bullshit answer. As I said, read up on the Wikipedia page for humanism. It fits pretty well. You can find some interesting stuff in there that'll branch out, and you can get a nice grounding on a philosophy that is not dickish.
I think that, well, to go back to the Buellerist view,
mm-hmm.
I think that if you take the opinion that you should believe in yourself, then you have one.
That's not really a worldview, though. That's just some fucking campfire. You can be anything you want to be.
American dream. No, what I think it says is that inherently human beings, as a whole, are good. Like, if you make decisions with careful thought and analysis of not only yourself but others, You can find a happy middle. You will do more good than harm, generally speaking. All I'm saying is that if you take this Buellerist attitude of saying, I think that I can dictate for myself what is moral and what is good, then that means that you have only one obligation, is to ensure that you achieve the maxim of that idea. That if you believe in yourself, then you have to strive for that good. You have to be that good. Otherwise, why believe in you? Right? You're just a piece of shit if you don't strive for the good. And you should have no fucking further belief in yourself, because you suck. So, if you're going to believe in yourself, be awesome. That's what I'm going to say.
No pressure.
I can summarize.
No pressure.
Well, it can be a gradual thing. No one said be awesome overnight. To be awesome is the better thing.
It can be a lifelong work in progress.
I feel to some degree, I always appreciated...
You know, this is it's not just Ferris Buellerism. It's actually a Bill and Tedism.
Be excellent. All right.
To each other as well. Yeah. Be excellent to each other.
The wild stallion. Save the day. All right, let's get to the meat of the show, because I think everybody's going to be real happy, real fucking glad, because there's lots of fire and brimstone coming again your way through the laws of the Pentateuch.
You need to know what you're not allowed to do and what you're supposed to do. That's the fun thing about these laws, is that they're broken down into a certain number of different laws. You've got what you're not allowed to do, what you should be doing, and then you've got, like, the fatal never ever do these ones. You've got, like, the forbidden, you should die rather than break these sins laws.
We'll start first. I've broken it up into 8 different sections. I guess because they're the ones that I feel somehow compelled to mention. The first one is what the Bible has to say in regards to menstruation, because it has quite a few things to say. So I want to focus first on the laws of it, which I think are almost entirely in Leviticus, but there might be in a few other places. So here are the rules concerning when you menstruate, ladies. Number one, any woman who's on her period will be unclean for 7 days. All right, so a whole week you have to be sequestered, because everything that you touch will also be unclean. Like if you sit down somewhere...
On a chair.
And then a dude later comes by, sits down in the same chair, he is now also unclean and has to be quarantined for 7 days.
Does hand sanitizer or Lysol negate this Satan-like uncleansingness?
Nothing negates it. It's also why they need to sequester themselves, because they can taint the purity of, high priests or, important individuals, kings and so on. So menstruating women must be isolated at all costs. Like, if you're going to do it, ladies, go do it in the woods, away from everybody and away from anything. Also in the rule is that a man who sleeps with a woman who's on her period will be unclean for 7 days as well.
What was interesting was one of the don't do this, you should die rather than do this sins, was apparently like sleeping with a menstruating woman. It was like one of the ones in the Talmud, which is basically, it isn't the Bible, it's all of the rabbis
the
kind
tradition.
Of extrapolating on top of the Bible and trying to interpret things and saying here's what we think on that. And one of those deadly sins, one of those sins that you really shouldn't do, is bang a chick on her menstrual period.
Which is a real shame, because they're horniest when they're fucking menstruating.
What are you talking about? I can't tell you how many times you have stuck-up girlfriends who are just like, I'm menstruating, and you're just like, who cares? Now, I understand now, because I never understood the cramps or the uncomfortableness that women went through until they got bitchy enough to fucking let me know about it. Because when you're a young lad and you're hanging out with teenage girls, they don't tell you this stuff. They don't talk about their cramps. They don't fart in front of you. They don't do these things. It's like bodily functions stay a secret. They don't let you know how shitty they feel for that entire week and a half.
They're following the commandments. They're not supposed to tell us about their suffering. The reason they bleed out of their vaginas because God has cursed them. I mean, you can understand in that light why anyone would be, you can't sleep with a woman who's fucking menstruating. She is cursed by God. And for fucking 7 days of the week, God will fucking purge her body of that curse.
It must have been really weird back in the day when they didn't know the source. Yeah. Where that came from.
Or why it happened. I mean, think about this. How many human beings in the history of mankind have been obsessed with blood? The answer is almost all of them. You know what I mean? Name a fucking religion that isn't obsessed with blood. Blood sacrifice, blood atonement. It's all about the blood. All the time the blood. Blood sacrifice. We're obsessed with that shit. It's the liquid that makes us go. So
back in the day, it's what you had. You had the breath and you had the blood, so everything had to do with that.
I guess we obviously knew that the blood was important, even when we were
idiots.
Functionally retarded about all knowledge. But we knew that if you took out enough of that stuff out of someone, he wouldn't feel so good and he would probably be dead. So obviously there's an élan vital, something fucking important, a life giving thing about blood. You're like, well, clearly life must exist somewhere in this blood, therefore I will take that life and offer it to a deity that seems thirsty for it. Very thirsty for blood.
Oh, I mean, looking at these, looking at all the laws, I mean, here's what, like, the interesting thing, you might be thinking 613 laws, that seems like a lot. And let me tell you what, it was a lot when you're reading through it, but you start to realize
there's a lot of repeating.
Plus, if you aren't the person sacrificing everything, if you're not a priest,
if you're not a king,
there's a bunch of stuff that doesn't apply to you. And again, because of the modernization of the world, because this is not a land that's upset, like where everybody's handling lamb, like living lamb in a shepherd situation,
yeah.
Or you're not, you don't have cows, you're not riding donkeys, then all of a sudden it gets a lot easier to follow all these laws because a lot of them are obviously out of date.
Yeah, need to be revised. I wonder how much if you really trim down all the shit that doesn't matter. Because here's the thing, I mean, I didn't make this list because this ain't the fucking the Bible stories that says here's the good parts of the Bible, but you could say take some of those laws, pick out the ones that you're like, I like these. You know, for instance, a law that says that you have to allow a certain amount of your crops to go to people who are fucking starving, or that you have to fucking take care of the poor, or all these other kinds of things. You're like, fuck, I wish that people would focus on those every once in a while, these people who shove that shit down our throat. Oh, homosexuality is an abomination. Oh, yeah, you know what else is an abomination? Fucking charging interest on loans. That's a fucking abomination. It's mentioned so many fucking times that Jews are not supposed to do this, not to charge interest, that you're kind of like, what the fuck, man? Why don't you focus on that one? That one sounds kind of nice. I like it. As a poor person, I definitely would.
Or don't stick a block in front of a blind man so he'll trip over it. I like that one, too.
That one, what the hell is that one about? You
know, that was obviously some blind old guy who was like, stupid kids, stick this in the Bible.
Or maybe it used to be a game. I don't know. The stick a roadblock in front of a blind guy game.
Well, it was the, maybe it was like the Old Testament version of like, you know, getting down on all fours behind a friend and having someone else shove them over you.
Yeah, well, it's this, you know, human beings haven't fundamentally changed in a long time. So if you remember all the dicks that you knew in your life, they weren't any different, except for the dicks back then were probably a lot more violent. So that was fun, I bet. Be glad to be alive now if you're listening to this in the civilized world, because, you know, there are listeners to the show that are in places where that still happens, right? Like, we don't live in only a first world world. There's different kinds of worlds. We have modern times, like in the West, and then in many other places in the world, it's kind of like, wow, it's the 14th century. What the fuck? 14th century with modern weapons. What's happening?
Yeah, it seems kind of scary.
It's almost like you remember those shitty movies where a guy goes back in time and he has all this knowledge about the future and he uses it to his advantages to defeat his enemies? That's happening all the time in this world. People with fucking knowledge of the future, modern world, going back to the 14th century and using that. Fucking scary. You thought it was a shitty plot to a movie. Man, it's real life. Fucking Martin Lawrence there, you know, the Black Knight movie.
I don't think he really got any advantage from his future knowledge. It was just a lot of fart jokes and like, damn,
whatever.
Boy.
He won the day and the lady. But all he had to do was travel to Afghanistan. He didn't need to go into a time machine. Just go to Afghanistan, baby. All right, let's move on from the menstruation. I feel like we've already... there is one more aspect, and this goes back to the whole blood sacrifice. That
more
after
menstruation.
You finish, after you're done menstruating and being fucking sequestered and shit, you must take two doves to a priest and have him kill one of them, slit its throat on the altar, and the other one has to be burned.
See, this is where I once again wonder whether or not all of these laws are actually practiced by the Orthodox Jewry, because if it is, I'm going to move into New York and open a dove store.
All your dove needs. Yeah. Ladies, stop by our store, pick up some doves ready for sacrificing.
Yep, they come in twos.
Many of them have already been doused in kerosene, ready to be lit on fire. I mean, it's all about convenience, honestly. And we feed them explosives, so they just pop. It's like popcorn. Okay, the next one we're going to talk about is marriage. So obviously every conservative asshole who's ever sort of gone on a tirade about marriage sort of fundamentally breaking apart, if you like gays in on it, because they're going to ruin everything. They always ruin everything, don't they? They ruin the Wizard of Oz. They ruin everything. Anyways, so the sanctity of marriage, the Bible has quite a few things to say about it. So the first one is, now you guys remember that in ancient times everybody's real obsessed about virginity. It is like the fucking important thing. If your daughter's not a virgin, she's pretty much fuck a dead woman. Because if a dude, let's pretend you just marry a girl and you are unsatisfied with her, you could say, this girl was not a virgin when I got her. If that happens, then her parents have to provide the bedsheet that they collected after the first night of copulation, showing the bloodstain from the hymen, presumably being torn up.
Well, plus, don't forget that a lot of these women were circumcised, so, you know, basically sewn up.
I think that's a relatively recent thing, and I think it happens more in Africa. I don't know if it happened in ancient you know, Israel. But
well, that is one.
Regardless,
that's nice. I'm actually happy to hear that.
Yeah, let's just. It's only a recent barbarity.
It's like, well, I'm glad that means less women went through that horrible procedure. Jeez.
Well, here's the deal, though. If your parents don't have that sheet for whatever reason, I mean, okay, look. Any woman out there that's ever done any amount of physical activity knows that your hymen can break for fucking any number of reasons. Like, hymens have broken for fucking, you know, too much hiking and shit like that. Like, sometimes they bust. And if it popped before your fucking wedding night, you didn't have any proof of blood, and your parents couldn't provide this evidence. Remember, you are presumed guilty until proven innocent by this fucking stained blood bedsheet. If they do not have this bedsheet, you're found to be a whore, and you will be stoned by the village to death. Now, if your parents have this wonderful testament to your virginity in their possession, so cryptic, but whatever, then the man has to get whipped, and he has to pay a fine of 100 silver pieces.
Are they silver pieces or shekels?
They're silver pieces.
Oh.
It's a big fine.
I love the word shekel. Ooh, shekels. I want a shekel.
I don't even know what the equivalence of that in today's world is. Like, how do you calculate that shit? Is it worth, like, a dollar in today's day? Like, what is inflation in ancient Israel? No fucking idea. But anyways, 100 pieces of silver sounds pretty high. So the man, when he accuses his wife, at most suffers a very serious financial penalty and a couple whippings, and at best has his wife stoned to death so he can have a new one. So, $100 to take a chance on a new lady.
Well, I think 100 silver pieces would be more than $100, at least back in, like, ancient times.
True,
100
true.
Of anything back in ancient times.
I would say
where things used to cost one silver piece.
See, that's the problem. We don't even know, right? Was one silver piece a lot? Fucking who knows? Anyways, major fine. So we'll almost say that sounds fair for women, considering the Bible.
For the Bible.
Yeah.
For the fair for women, for the Bible.
For the Bible, all right? That's almost fair. Here's another good one from Deuteronomy. If your brother dies, and his wife, you first of all, you have to marry his wife and try to produce an offspring that bears his name. That's your responsibility as the brother-in-law, okay? So you have to fuck her. But you're not obliged to. If you say no to her, right, because she's not hot enough, you know, gentlemen, when your brother picks a fucking lady, you should have a say, you know what I mean? Because you may have to bang her. You may have to bang her. Anyways, if you say no to her, she's allowed to drag you in front of, like, this rabbinical court, spit in your face, and slap you with her sandal. So, you are shamed publicly for not banging your brother's widow.
Hmm.
So, that's another part of... That's the wonder sanctity of marriage. Fuck your brother's widow. Another interesting bit is the way that rape works in terms of marriage. So, rape is probably a pretty common thing back then. So, they have two rules. Number one is if you rape a girl that's supposed to be married.
So, promise to somebody else.
Promise to someone else as a piece of property. Then you are put to death. And if the woman didn't scream loud enough or try to, you know, fight him off well enough, depending on the mercy of the court, she may also be put to death. But, you know, if she's really convincing and she's crying a lot in the court, they may believe the fact that she was not a willing participant. So you got to fucking lay it on thick when you go to court. All right, ladies? You got to fucking pull out all your acting muscles. So, yeah, that's just to survive. Now, if you are a virgin and a man rapes you,
and you're not promised,
and you're not promised to anybody, you were just, I don't know, a 12-year-old girl raped by some crazy bastard, then his responsibility is to marry you. He's not allowed to divorce you, because divorce is legal. We'll get to that. And he has to pay 50 shekels to the father.
Shekels.
Shekels!
Shekels.
I would say shekels or dollars. Hmm. So you pay the father 50 bucks, and now you gotta marry this girl.
Again, I'm still thinking we're not giving shekel inflation the respect that we should.
I think that it is that low.
Regardless, I think this is pretty fair because it tells rapists, look, watch out, because if you get caught, there are consequences, my friend. You will have to marry that woman.
And you can't divorce her.
Yep. So
it's really important.
I think that that's some pretty good That's enough to stop a lot of these guys from raping these women.
And let's remember,
talk
too,
about awkwardness.
Yeah, that is pretty awkward. And imagine, too, I mean, you're married to this girl, you can't divorce her, and she's probably going to try to poison you. That's what I'd do if I was raped.
I imagine back in the day...
You just sort of like...
Back in the
this.
Day, the wills have been broken down since, like, early childhood.
You can't stand rebellious girls. You can't have that.
Oh, look, up until the 60s, we were lobotomizing willful women in the United States. What was it like thousands of years ago?
With rebellious girls? I don't know. Probably not...
Left to the wolves.
Well, there are parts of the Bible that are very... the Pentateuch, that's very, very specific about the treatment of women slaves versus men slaves. Like, if you have a slave, a man slave, and after 7 years of service... you have to let him go unless he willfully chooses to stay, right? Like, let's say you have a slave and he probably, I don't know, fucked one of your other slave girls. They have a family and shit like that, right? He's not allowed to bring them. At his 7-year mark, he's to leave. You're to give him presents, but he cannot have his children. He can't have his fucking wife back. So if he stays, which he can keep these things, he's never allowed to ask for his freedom again. All right. So the men are still offered freedom.
It's
regardless
like
of slavery.
A twisted deal or no deal.
Unless you're Canaanite, by the way. And as a Canaanite, you have to be a slave forever unless your master severs one of your limbs. Then you're allowed to go. but if you're a woman, then according to the laws, you never really get your freedom. Unless you get fucked. Like, if your master fucks you, then he has to let you go. Or he has to marry you. It's one of the two.
I bet you that's one of those ones that just never, ever got actually carried out. I bet you there was a whole bunch of masters banging their female slaves and just, you're not getting free.
No.
No.
The fact that it's still a fantasy now tells me that it was just happening before.
What do you mean? I wouldn't say that it was...
A master-slave fantasy? You're right. No one has ever fucked each other. With this whole, I'm a master, you're a slave thing. You're right.
Fair
you
enough.
Got me there.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay, so like I was saying, female slaves, you don't really have, you know, a lot of options. You can't leave and blah, blah. So it is pretty shitty. So I guess when your rapist marries you, that's not the worst thing that could happen. It's not good, but it's not the worst thing. Here's another one. This one's actually kind of good for the ladies. If... a husband marries a woman for an entire year. He's not... no one is allowed to conscript him in the army. He's not... he doesn't have to fucking perform any civic duties for one whole year while he tries to satisfy his wife and pump out some kids. So
if that one is practiced in Israel, you just wait until some crazy Mideast conflict comes up and then you get married. You keep that in your back pocket for like... When Israel fucks with Iran, that's where you get married. I'm getting married now. Sorry, can't help.
Yeah, and another one that sort of like kind of works out for the ladies is that men are not allowed to withhold food, clothes, or sexual relations from their wives.
That's
so they
good.
Have a duty.
That's good. I'm sure they're like, fuck me more, husband, with your dirty, dusty penis,
your rapist penis. Fuck me more, please. Because it doesn't make me cry every time you do.
You're not allowed to withhold all that awesome sex from these women.
It's just too good. Oh, another one. In Deuteronomy, Jews are not allowed to marry non-Jews. So about 53% of all Jews break this commandment.
But there is a lot of there's a lot of pressure. Like, everybody who listens to the podcast regularly knows that we love John Safran. He's a Jew from Australia. He does a bunch of really good shows.
John Safran versus God is highly recommended. I'll put a couple of links in the notes. Check him out. Fucking awesome shit.
But he had an episode where he was talking about how he used to get pressured by his grandmother about...
What was it she said?
Marrying a Jew. It's like, if you don't, it's like finishing Hitler's work. It's like you were effectively wiping out the Jewish people if you don't keep the bloodline pure. That's the fucking shit that they
Man,
put up with.
That's so fucking xenophobic and racist, and they don't even know it. They think it's nice. They're like, don't marry anyone that doesn't come from your same belief line. I'm like, you know what? If you want to keep your semantic line, that includes anyone that lives in Palestine. So you can marry Palestinians. Oh, but wait, you can't.
They're different.
They're so different. Okay, that covers marriage. Let's move on. Another one that I found kind of interesting, but there was a number of rules of war. So the first one, which I thought was extremely interesting and hilarious, is that you must bury your shit when you're at war. You're not allowed to leave your poo exposed to the winds, because if you do, God will turn his back on you. So bury your shit.
I enjoy the laws that are very obviously just, you know, common sense, that are just turned into God laws, just because, you know, just do it. God says so.
God says bury your poo.
Don't ask me any more questions. It's just a good idea. When you do it, you're blessed. If you're not, plagues upon you. God hates it. Just bury it.
It's like, I got some... The rule is simple. The rule is not... There's no amendment in the rule says you're allowed to question this rule, fuckface.
There's no because. There is just... There's no asking why.
There is do.
There is do.
Just do. Okay, so that one's bury your shit. Here's another interesting one. If you are in the army and you know, you're fucking pillaging and shit like that, and you bring back a prize, so virgin woman... Because, you know, all those that aren't virgins, you're supposed to fucking kill them. So a virgin lady comes back to your house. She's now yours. She's your slave or whatever. You can do what you want with her. But there's a couple rules. The first rule is that you have to shave her head and trim all her nails off. Okay? And let her mourn her family for a month. You're not allowed to touch her, nothing. You gotta fucking let her mourn for one whole month. And then, if she does not, and I quote this, the Bible, delight you... Then after you rape her, then you must send her away. You can't keep her if she doesn't entice your loins.
I just don't understand how there could be this effective law that says if your slave sucks, get rid of it, because then you'd have a lot of sucky slaves just so that they'd get to go.
Well, she wasn't... See, this particular... the particular rules about bringing back war, you know, bitches, if you want,
yep,
is just that if... They really don't want you to keep the ones that don't interest you. I think it's just because they want to just pass that shit around, right? You can't be greedy. There's a limited amount of slaves to go around. So if your slave whore is not totally enticing your penis, there's bound to be another, guy who wants some of that. So I think it's probably one of those share the wealth.
It's kind of like if you don't like this video game... Sell it back to GameSpot, and GameSpot will sell it to another gamer.
That's right. That's right. It's important to keep the market flowing with slaves. I think this is what the general rules of slavery are.
I like how God has that secondary market open. That's smart.
Well, it's the invisible hand of the economy that he's fully aware of.
Invisible hand of God.
Well, I guess so. All right,
he controls everything, man.
Including the economy.
Absolutely.
And Rick Perry.
So this is why we're in such problems. We've turned away from the Talmud, and we've turned away from all these laws.
Well, we do charge interest. Many banks do. And who really fucked us over? The banks, right? Caused the economic crisis. It's God punishing the money lenders.
But they made out like bandits throughout all this. So.
Exactly. That's how you punish them. You give them wealth, because it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than a camel to pass through the eye of a needle, buddy. We're cursing them with wealth. Let's keep doing that. That sounds like a fucking good idea. All right, here's another one. Specific rules that are laid out concerning who they're supposed to kill. So they must destroy all seven Canaanite nations. They just got to kill them all. So and let none of them remain alive. Even though it's weird because they have rules about keeping them as slaves, right? Anyways.
And other rules about not killing?
Oh, yeah, but those apply to only Jews. It doesn't apply to cursed people, right?
Huh.
Also, you're supposed to kill all the Amalekites, because the whole story of the Amalekites is that... Do you remember the Bible story where they're in the wilderness and they're traveling around and they get attacked by the Amalekites? And that's the whole thing where Moses has to lift up his hands and keep his hands up, and every time he does, his army wins, but when he gets tired and his hands drop, it's like his army starts to lose? That stupid shit?
Yep.
Story? Okay. That's Amalek. That's his people that apparently, I guess, out of nowhere, attacked these wanderers and tried to kill them, but didn't actually win. So they're like, remember... They make specific rules. Remember these dudes, and fucking kill all these dudes. Two things. First, you must remember them, and then you must kill all of them.
All of them.
Now, the crazy thing about that particular passage is There are many very, say, fundamentalist Jews who believe that the Amalekites are actually modern-day Palestinians.
That is a very destructive belief. It can't be a positive or helpful.
It's something that's taught in very religious schools to children, being like, these are the children of Amalek. You must not forget them. You must wipe them out. This is the kind of fucking messages that they put through to young people in Israel. I fucking shit you not, all right? The hatred is alive. And the Amalekite, the commandment to kill them, is a fucking strong source of that hatred, my friend. Because how else are you going to justify killing people who live there, right? Why would you kill them? They're your fucking neighbors. What's a good reason? Oh, because God told you to kill them. Okay. Who am I to question God or the people who told me who the Amalekites are? I shouldn't question these things. I should just do as I'm told. Thank you, religion. Proving once again that you make the world a safer place. All right, that covers the rules of war. Let's move on to religious proselytizing. I think this is a good one for most Christians. because the rules of the Old Testament is, number one, anyone who performs signs and wonders, so anyone performing miracles throughout the board, and anyone telling you to follow their God or to follow them as deities, are to be put to death. So that's the funny thing about Jesus, right? And you wonder, oh, why was Jesus killed by the Jews, according to Mel Gibson? And I'll tell you why. He broke a commandment, okay? He performed signs and wonders. He fucking performed sorcery, dude! Curing people of blindness, walking on water, raising the dead. Yeah, these are all things that sorcerers do. You can read about it all the time in the Bible. Sorcerers were doing all kinds of crazy things. In fact, Moses was a sorcerer. I know that's weird, since they say that you shouldn't
kill
fucking
all sorcerers.
Kill all fucking sorcerers, except for Moses and Aaron. Everyone else has to die. Regardless, Jesus, according to the Old Testament, has to be killed. This is quite clear. He is a proselytizer showing signs and wonders. So, that's a good one. Deuteronomy 15, that's what... verse 1 through 6. So, quote that to any of your Jesus lovers. Be like, signs and wonders... it's a sin. Next one, I like this one. If you hear that in a nearby town there are any religious proselytizers, because trust me, back in those days, you didn't have any proselytizers in your town. But if there is another town that's going around and, you know, trying to get everybody to follow their God, you have to kill everyone in that town and burn all their shit and kill all their animals. Like, and you can't take any of it. You just have to fucking scorched earth that shit. Utterly destroyed religious proselytizers. Bam. Tolerance, baby.
Reasonable.
That's religious tolerance. Also very important one, I'm sure most of you are aware of this, that if any family member tries to convert you to another religion, you must be the first person to try to kill them. So it's very important that you try to kill any family member that tries to convert you away from Yahweh, your God. So keep that in mind anytime one of your hippie fucking family members tries to convince you to do anything hippie-like. I'm talking to you, Melissa, with your reiki, your sorcery. I'm coming after you. The Pentateuch told me to. let's talk about sacrifices a little bit, because I know that you had a... you really like this one where if you have... you have to redeem your firstborn donkey by killing a lamb. And if you don't do this, then your neighbor is allowed to destroy your donkey.
He's allowed to break your donkey's neck. I imagine with some kind of hammer or something. It's not specifically... it must be difficult to break a donkey's neck. I figure there must be either some device or just some well-known trick to it. It must not be pleasant.
Well, I actually have a theory about how you do it. First of all, you become what's called a Nazarene or Nazarite. And what are these people? There's a specific... I don't know if you remember in the laws, there was actually specific commandments about Nazarites. They're like these weird people that are not allowed to shave their heads, not allowed to eat grapes or raisins or wine or anything else like that. And when you do that, you're granted super fucking natural powers. A la Samson, who was a Nazarite. So the whole thing is, if you're like one of these dudes who doesn't cut his hair, you could probably just walk into town and break a fucking donkey's neck. With just your fucking, a little neck twist. Like the way that, Arnold Schwarzenegger punched that donkey, but try like a million times stronger. That's how you kill that donkey. Punch it right in the face.
Yeah.
Nazarite style.
It's just very interesting, that law. It didn't make much sense, but okay.
What, the superpower law?
Well, no, no. The whole if you got a new donkey, you got to kill a lamb. It seems like a net loss, but it certainly subtracts from the value of a firstborn donkey.
Well, it seems like a firstborn donkey is a very expensive endeavor. I can't imagine sort of like a lamb being a very cheap thing to kill in order to satisfy this new fucking... this new donkey that could just die. You know, donkeys die.
Who knows what lamb inflation is? There could be like tons of... You could have tons of lamb. Lamb out the ass. No problem. Whatever.
Well,
lamb.
If you're a rich shepherd, maybe. But say you're a poor dude trying to fucking get by. You got one donkey. You got maybe two lambs. You got to kill one of your lambs to fucking get your donkey to reproduce? That's bullshit, man. You're never going to fucking pull up and raise yourself by your bootstrap with this whole lamb for a donkey business.
I'm sure there's a parable about taxation in all this.
Here's another. I love this one. If there is an unsolved murder, then you must break the neck of a calf by the river. Again, like this breaking neck thing, man. They must have been... There's got to be a technique that we're just not aware of. Like, step on its neck and fucking curb it with a rock. I don't know what.
You need some 80s action movie stars to come in and just do that.
It's like Roadhouse. You fucking do a fucking crazy kick. You break some necks.
I don't think Roadhouse actually killed people. Was Swayze killing people in that? I know he killed, like, the final guy, but I thought mostly he was just bouncing.
All right, this is Roadhouse Biblical Edition.
Okay.
People die. There's no fucking Roadhouse kick and then you survive.
It's like more of a Rambo thing. It's more of a Schwarzenegger. I'm sure Van Damme did his share of neck breaking too.
Who has the record as a movie star for most broken necks on screen is what I wonder. I think it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Probably.
I think he's broken a lot of necks. I think in Commando he breaks like 10. Just in Commando alone. So it's good. It's good. Here's another crazy thing about God. He demands that all sacrifices be properly salted. So, he doesn't like sweets, right? You're not allowed to burn honey on an altar. Obviously, the man is for salty.
It's his favorite flavor.
That's right. And, you know, heaven is supposed to be, flowing with honey. So, clearly, I don't know what he prefers, but his altar is salt, but heaven is sweet.
Honey for you, salt for him. He gets the pretzels, you get the honey.
All right, so any of you salt lovers out there, you're defying God by also not properly salting your animals. Another thing, too, God does not like any animals that are busted up. So, if your animal is, like, maimed, or if he's blind, or if he's crippled... You cannot sacrifice him. God only wants primo fucking animals. All right? You're insulting him by killing this animal that you're probably going to kill anyways because it may no longer do the labor that you needed to. But they don't want you to be that convenient. They want you to kill the good one. So if one of your fucking animals is injured, you still have to sacrifice the fucking good one, man. Again, like I said, really hard for the farmer with only a few fucking animals that's required to fucking provide at least one offering every goddamn Rosh Hashanah. Fucking every New Year, he has to provide at least one sacrifice. Man, hard to get ahead, and you have to give the fucking altar your best shit.
Never mind the budget for doves. If you have a wife.
Oh, I can't
imagine.
Heaven
forbid you have daughters.
No, and you can't work one day of the week. You're not allowed to work one day. So even if you thought you were going to catch up, being like, maybe if I work the Sunday and I plow the fields, I might get a little bit more. No, fucker. You do that, and the whole town's got to stone you to death. I mean, they're not joking about that shit. Taking the Sunday, well, in their case, Saturday off, that was like, you had to. No one is working on that day to the penalty of death. Serious holiday fucking obligation. And for all those of you that love working, that's a punishment. Well, that's not a punishment for us, though. We'll keep that one. Here's a weird one. I don't know what this means, because I guess people back then just thought that dogs were the worst in the Middle East, because they said that you're not allowed to offer any animal that you actually traded for a dog. Like, if in the transaction the animal that you sacrificed was either purchased with monies from a whore, I don't even know why you have whore money, maybe you're a pimp, whatever. Or you somehow had a dog that you traded in for it, you can't kill it because it's sullied because of the transaction, because a dog was involved.
It's a bit of a sketchy transaction. They didn't like that.
I don't even understand why they hate dogs. I mean, dogs are great sheep herders. What's wrong with you? You would have had to work half as much if you would have just gotten on this whole shepherd dog thing, you morons. It's like, dogs are awesome. That's why we tried to domesticate dogs twice. You know this? There was fossil evidence that found that 30,000 years ago, human beings were starting to domesticate dogs. But because of the Ice Age, it kind of put a 20,000-year gap on that whole having dogs. But as soon as the fucking Ice Age melts, guess what? Back to domesticating dogs, man. It's like we were made for one another. Dogs and people getting together.
Like peanut butter and chocolate.
Like peanut butter and fucking chocolate, man. That's a serious combination. All right, let's talk about weird, helpful laws. We'll put all the rest of the laws on, kind of, we'll lump it all together. The stuff that just doesn't make any sense. Or that's kind of, you know, strangely, like if you applied it for today, you could get so much free labor. Let me give you an example. One of the laws is that people have to help you unload or load goods if they're around and you're having trouble. So I think you could just make every fucking Jew that you know help you move. Yeah? For free. They're not allowed to charge you.
It'd be a good test. You'd have to do it during the week, I suppose. And before sundown.
Well, you're not going to do it on Saturday. Otherwise, they will stone you to death. But, I mean, if you're moving on a Saturday, that sucks. I would recommend moving on a weekday if you're going to try to use
that. That's a hallowed day for partying and awesomeness.
Exactly. It's a sacred day for not doing work and just really lazing about. Apparently you're also not supposed to bow to a smooth stone, which I don't quite understand, and that means that every pilgrimage in Jerusalem where people bow down and kiss that stone where Jesus was apparently laid when he died are committing a grievous error, so they're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, that's just one of those strange ones that you look at and you go, how am I supposed to interpret this? Like, does it just mean that you always have to kneel down on shitty rocks? Or is it like actually you can't be bowing to a specific smooth stone that is in front of you? What's up with this?
Maybe smooth stones used to be kind of, you know, its own thing, like a special kind of pagan altar or some fucking shit.
This is where you need a bunch of rabbis just to tell you what to think, because God damn it.
It's confusing. It's
very unclear.
Smooth, like how smooth is smooth, man? Like, if it's mildly rough, am I allowed to fucking bow down?
If you're in the Middle East, smooth might, you know, not be that smooth.
Well, smooth back then, I mean, I don't think they had the kind of polishing technology that we have now, dude. So smooth could have just been not irregularly shaped. That's what I'd say. Here's another one. You're not supposed to engage in any astrology whatsoever. So if you ever read your horoscope, you're in fucking trouble. You're also not allowed to ever use a Ouija board, because that's trying to contact the dead. Or going to a James, or what's his name of that? James von Prague, or whatever his name is.
Oh, one of those crossing
James
over.
James Edward, that's it. Where it's like, yeah, crossing over. Whoa, I'm getting a lot of... Did your grandmother's name start with A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, D, K, L, M, A, P? It did! It started with a P! Oh my God! She's talking to me right now. That's a sin, baby. And you're not supposed to perform any acts of magic. Now, I actually have to ask you, do you think that they would consider the shit that Copperfield does magic? Because I think so.
Definitely.
Well, because remember their magic tricks? Moses' shitty fucking trio of magic that he uses to get everyone to believe that he's the chosen prophet of God? Do you remember what the three magic tricks were? This is a big trivia.
Sorry, my mind is away on David Copperfield. I'm like, I gotta look that motherfucker up on YouTube. I bet you there's all sorts of stuff that I didn't see when I was a kid.
Yeah. Do you want to hear something actually hilarious about David Copperfield that I've heard from some of my magician buddies?
What's that?
He has a special hot tub that he designed so that when he's in the hot tub, he can just sort of like go down it in this crazy tube and then pop out, and he uses this to impress ladies and get them to sleep with him because he's very insecure.
Insecure?
Yeah. He actually is. He's really insecure about himself. So he has to use... He tries to convince girls that he's really magic. For real. In order to get them to sleep with him.
I'm sure he's got so many fucking tricks that... It's just unbelievable. Just like for a date with David Copperfield from beginning to
end... He has his own island!
...is an entire act.
Copperfield Island!
Well, wasn't there this whole thing where someone accused him of Copperfield Island magic sex that was not allowed?
Sex by magic?
Some kind of Julian Assange mysterious...
All right, you know, here's the thing, though. I'm sure that once you sort of wake up out of your delusion and realize that there is no magic and he's just some fucking dude with a whole bunch of geeky gadgets that he knows how to work and he's just a fucking loser like every other guy that you probably dated, you probably will scream rape, being like, what the fuck? How was I convinced to sleep with this lame-o? But, you know, magic is magic. It will fucking get you, baby. Nothing will get you more wet than magic, which is why the Bible has to make it a sin to commit, except for, again, like we said, if you're Moses or Aaron, which is all good. So the answer to the trivia question, what are the three magic tricks? The answer is, the first one is the snake dropping the staff and turns into a snake and turns into a staff again. The second magic trick is that he puts his hand underneath his armpit, and when he pulls it out, it's super white, and then when he puts it back, it's flesh-colored again.
That's a lame trick.
The third trick is that he pours a container of water on the ground and it turns into blood. These are the three magic tricks that Moses does, which are technically a sin. But he does it to convince the Pharaoh that he's, like, a real dude. Although, do you consider, like, calling things of locusts and whatever acts of magic? Because he does those, too.
Yeah, but there's a difference between just things that happen because God makes them happen, and when you actually have Moses there actively, it's kind of like the whole Moses raising his hands. It's kind of like God being like, yeah, I'm kind of busy. Can you handle this?
I'm going to give you a temporary
staff,
power.
Lift it up, and I'll just bend the laws, and it'll be like that.
I got a black hole to take care of. You can just, lift up your hands.
Do your thing.
Do your thing. And plus, you know, if you're going to do anything, it has to be a little bit hard. Not super hard, but try to lift up your hands for a whole day.
God loves challenging people.
I think it's necessary. It's almost like Fear Factor. The fucking Jewish edition.
Can you do it?
Important one is that men are not allowed to wear women's clothing and women are not allowed to wear men's clothing. But I wonder sort of like, you know, the application of this might be difficult. Would a Scottish kilt qualify as women's clothing?
Are jeans considered unisex and therefore not considered either men or women's clothing?
And wasn't everybody wearing robes? I mean, they didn't have pantaloons back then. Like, how the fuck can you tell? My robe is really brown, and your robe is slightly less brown. Boring, dusty robes. And I mean, we've seen how many fucking reenactments or fucking movies where they try to depict ancient Jews. And let me tell you something. It is not very easy to discern between the women and the men's clothing. Maybe a tiny bit more color for the ladies. So, you're in a danger zone here.
Maybe it's more just like a hat thing. Or like arm... what are those shoulder pads and specific cuts of underwear?
I don't know. Anyways, here's another thing that is part of the Bible. I don't know if it makes much sense, but it's kind of how they used to manage a lot of conflict. Is that one of the rules is that you had to designate one of your cities a city of refuge. And this city had to take in anybody that was trying to run away from, you know, maybe they accidentally killed someone or really actually killed someone or they're... They did a bunch of 613 fucking weird rules that you're not supposed to break kind of thing, right?
Maybe it's just back in the day it was the equivalent of what we would call manslaughter nowadays. Whoops, you let those pillars fall and they crushed six people's faces.
Yeah, and the problem is, of course, that the Bible has that whole eye for an eye, tooth for tooth thing. So naturally they have that problem where someone accidentally does something like, whoops, I accidentally poked out your eye. Well, now I got to take your eye. That's not cool. So whenever there's this kind of like, where the law fails, then you're supposed to go to the city of refuge. And there's a few rules about how you're supposed to handle this. Number one, and this is actually kind of weird. If you're running or you're trying to get to the city of refuge and you have a pursuer after you, then one of the weird rules is that you have to stop people pursuing others and you're allowed to kill them in the process.
So you ask the person who is on his way to the city of refuge to escape the crimes that he committed is allowed to kill the people who chase you?
No. The third party that's not involved has to get involved and stop the pursuer and allow this person fleeing to reach the city of refuge. So you're allowed to kill a pursuer who's trying to hunt down this guy before he gets to a city of refuge. You're allowed to kill him.
Because by Jewish law or by these laws of the Bible, that person is perfectly legitimately allowed to go to that city.
Right. But here's the deal. The guy, the family member who's been wrong because, I don't know, you were moving a rock and it accidentally crushed their sibling or whatever, he's allowed to wait as fucking long as he wants to outside the gates of the city to kill your ass. And he's not going to fucking suffer any persecution because of that. But you're perfectly allowed to stay in the city of refuge, hiding out forever. So you have that option. But he also has the option to kill you when you try to leave.
So it's kind of like an Ollie Oxen free. You get to go to the city, but after that, he's perfectly allowed to camp outside for as long as he wants, waiting for you to fucking leave.
That's right. So And I guess that's how they sort of like manage that gray zone. They're like, we'll let people figure it out. You're also not allowed to take any money as restitution. So anybody that's ever had a family member die and then asked to have a payment for that actually break commandment. Well, not a commandment, but one of the 613 mitzvahs. So you're not allowed to get money for a death. You can get revenge, but you have to do it outside the city of refuge. And you can't pursue him while he's trying to get there. Very, very specific rules. Hmm. You know, you have to let him get walk there his way. I recommend anyone who wants to kill anyone in this circumstance to just get, like, Winnebago or something like that. And just be patient. That's the real key to seeking retribution and vengeance. Just patience. Don't rush it, because you could be killed. And another interesting thing, that you are not allowed to idly stand by at anyone being attacked or murdered, regardless of whether or not it's allowed. Or it's just, again, another one of those weird, you have to get involved, even though the other rules are like, this is all making sense. So I can understand how some people might
get confused. So you just have to kind of go, whoa, slow down, everybody, establish the facts, and then let the killing continue?
Well, if you establish the facts, normally if there's killing, it should be court-approved. I mean, you remember how many fucking rules there was about having to fucking set up rabbinical courts, how the fucking courts are supposed to operate, how they're not supposed to have any fucking pity for anybody that's in court, and your judgment has to be based on the fucking laws, and that is it. So you have to do shit, you know, via the courts. That's what they prefer. Mm-hmm. But I think immediate justice is still allowed to be dispensed. It's just, it's a kind of, you know, try to play it on instinct in this savage, brutal world that you live in.
Hmm.
And that's, ladies and gentlemen, the our choice selection of the laws of the Pentateuch. If you want to comment on which ones are your favorite, if we didn't mention them on the show, please leave a comment and get everybody to sort of have everybody read this the hilarious parts that maybe we missed. Because, you know, after reading 613, we may have missed one or two. And they may have been hilarious.
It's true. Well, we didn't talk about the man on man anus sex.
I don't even feel it's necessary. It's everybody knows it.
Yeah.
It's played out. Like, oh, bestiality is a fucking sin. So is homosexuality. I'm like, well, you knew that already.
Old hat.
It's fucking old hat. And it's the ones that people focus on. I thought the show should be on the ones that, you know, make little or no sense. Because anytime someone tries to fucking shove Leviticus down your throat to tell you you're not allowed to fuck some other dude, then why don't you shove a couple of passages of Deuteronomy concerning fucking marriage, or, you know, sowing seeds that aren't supposed to be fucking sewn together, or wearing outfits that have two different fabrics in it, and tell them to shut the fuck up. And especially if they have a tattoo, too. Because, you know, like, at the end of homosexuality is an abomination, a few passages down is like, you're not allowed to mark your skin, and you're not allowed to cut yourself. It's a really big one. You can't, you know, like those things that goths do?
Mm-hmm.
It's a sin. No cutting yourself.
Just doesn't seem right.
And they're like, they're very specific. Don't cut yourself also if a family member dies. So I think that's an old tradition, really. Cut yourself.
Well, I mean, there's all these people flogging themselves and doing other stuff like that, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah, the Opus Dei dudes.
Oh, tons of people, especially out in the East. Some of those Eastern Christian groups.
Oh, yeah, the ones that fucking...
There's tons. Tons and tons and tons who do all sorts of fucked up things.
Whippings and crucifixions and all this other gruesome-ass shit.
The hardcore ones.
Did you see that picture I put up of that cat that was crucified?
Ah, gee, the what? No.
I put it on Facebook. There was an image where fucking... I don't know where this was. This may have been Indonesia.
Like a real picture of a real cat.
A fucking real cat crucified on a cross.
That's awful.
Why and they're fucking... even... They're dragging this around being like, we love Jesus! Just disgusting. Well, I have to put up shit that's disturbing once in a while. This shit happens, man. You gotta be aware of that. Otherwise, you're just ignoring reality.
I suppose.
This ain't the show that ignores reality, bro. The show that embraces it. Well, our version of it, at least. Okay, well, before we leave, I'd like to thank everyone who's a contributing member. And I'd like to congratulate one of our newest members, known online as Mighty Fuda, for winning the Tell Us Why You Think TGA is Addictive little contest that I put up. Gave him a 3-month membership because he said... I quite liked his quote, which essentially, to paraphrase, said that you have to rub religious people's nose in their bullshit. And I thought that was quite eloquent.
Now, I got another contest for you.
What's that? I think
would be good. We should ask people how they think we could be better and give the best answer a membership to.
Well, we can't announce that on the bonus show because the people who are on the listen to the bonus show already are members.
What are you talking about? We talk about it here. You put it up on Twitter and Facebook, and it just happens.
How we can be better. Well, I would like to release the survey before that happens. I think it'll be part of it anyways.
Sure.
And we did offer 2 free memberships for people who did fulfill the survey. So I think that just qualifies as that. But I have to get my ass on that. I've been putting this thing off for like 2.5 months. It's ridiculous.
I think you were talking about the survey before you left.
No. No, not before I left. But I was thinking about it for a long time because, you know, it's easy to say you want to do a survey, but when you sit down and say, what questions do I want to ask people, you realize that you don't know, man. You don't know. It's like, what do I want to know from you guys? Still working on that one.
What do we need to know?
Yeah. Well, it will be part of that new contest, and like I said, I want to congratulate Mighty Food. Pay attention to our Facebook group and Twitter. We'll be announcing every once in a while these kinds of contests and things like that. So we're trying to keep the Twitter and Facebook alive. It's one of the main ways that things are changing, like just trying to provide a bit more contents, fun links, those kinds of things. And unfortunately, the occasional picture of a cat being fucking crucified.
Yeah, don't click on it.
You just have to be aware that it exists.
Your awareness of it is enough. It's enough for me.
Yeah, do you really need to see the photo? All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I am Ryan Harkness.
Have a good enunciated Atheist Day, everyone.